First in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, whenever you're watching, excuse me, listening. We're the classic talk radio. Whenever you're listening to Spouting Off here, based in Nashua, New Hampshire, but available everywhere, you can hear our show live. Call and talk if you like, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'm your host, Karen Cataline, and honored and privileged to be here on 1590 AM WSMN and everywhere else. I probably have a couple of comments about the Nashville atrocity that was committed yesterday, but only a few, because I am generally appalled at the people who rush to use it as a political agenda-driven thing, which only then causes others to have to comment on that politically driven thing. I'm watching as the left goes out of their minds and out of their way to handle a story that doesn't really fit their narrative. A transgender person, and frankly, I'm always confused, you know, is a transgender woman a biological man? Is a transgender man a biological woman? You know, that's one of the challenges of this preposterous ideology that says that gender is fluid. Now you are characterized as being anti-trans if you don't want to take on the psychosis of saying that there are 57 genders and people can choose their gender and that they should demand that the rest of the world refer to them as they wish to be referred. Nobody else demands that, at least yet, that you have to address them in a certain way or they'll lose their cookies. In this case, I think it was a biological woman. It's hard telling these days. And there is nothing whatsoever wrong with referring to someone as they were born. But of course, the left is losing their cookies about that. They're not worried, or they don't seem, and this is a broad generalization I give you, they don't seem to be terribly worried about three children and three adults murdered in cold blood in a Christian church. They're more interested in how the killer was addressed. You know, oh, they were misgendered. This story is just fraught with heartache and misery. And I will make one other comment as a trained social worker. We were fed a load of garbage that somehow we needed to buy into this transgender ideology because people with gender dysphoria, and of course they characterized it differently, that they were born in the wrong body, preposterous. There was a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of people who actually went through with gender-changing surgery when they were adults back in the day. And now it has spread as a social contagion because the left has made it cool, made it a new victim group. That being said, too many things going on in my head at one time. It is disturbing that we were fed and served up this bizarre ideology that everybody has to march in goose step and have your property destroyed and, God forbid, hurt or harmed or killed if you refuse to use the right pronoun, which is in and of itself insane. But we were told that the reason we had to do all this is because trans people and people who thought they were born in the wrong body were committing suicide. And yet now we find out the early reportages that this woman was deeply and profoundly suicidal, planned to die this day, planned to take other people who happen to be Christians with her. And so once again, you see the ideology, political ideology, which has an entirely different agenda than what they claim. They get a lot of people on the bandwagon as useful idiots that put forth their crazy ideologies, actually create suicidal people. It increases suicidal people. It increases gender dysphoria when you teach a five-year-old that there is no such thing as boy or girl. This, we saw it coming, we watched it coming, and now you've got it to the new level. There have been other mass murderers who claimed to be trans or whatever. They had gender problems with their identity, and now some of them are taking to kill, and the left is morally bankrupt in their ability to understand the difference between victims and perpetrators, killers and law-abiding citizens who've had their lives snuffed out. This, to me, is indicative of the moral bankruptcy and depravity that we are watching today. I said I wasn't going to make a lot of comments, but here I am doing it because it is so deeply, profoundly disturbing what we are watching. So much unnecessary misery and pain being served up to us in the form of tyranny. If you don't agree with this, you deserve to be killed. Do you know that there was a professor who actually said that? He said, nah, you shouldn't shut him down. You should just kill him. He was suspended with pay. I don't have the story right in front of me, but there's an awful lot of this going on that is cheering and fueling this kind of social pathology that refuses to leave normal law-abiding citizens alone. If you want to be deviant and you're willing to respect other people's rights, go for it, baby. If you are at the age of consent, now we've all bets are off because now they're using children to confuse, indoctrinate, and abuse. I brought an audio, total different story, and good news for a change. Boy, don't we need it. Don't we need some good news in a sea of moral confusion? And that is the wonderful, and you don't have to agree with her on everything, and that is our motto, have passion, agree, disagree, but you don't have to, because, the America we know and love cheers on civil disagreement, civil debate and dissent. Christy Noem of South Dakota was asked if Biden would ever sign the ban against TikTok. And I loved what she said, and I want to play it for you right now. Go, Art.
I don't think he'll sign it because over and over again, this president has proven that he won't protect America and he won't make the right decision, especially when there's pressure. And the reason that I think he thinks he can get away with that is because it was just weeks ago we had a Chinese spy balloon flying over this country, and we quit talking about it already. If you go to every other network, if you go on social media, even Americans in their coffee shops aren't talking about the fact that this president allowed China to send a spy balloon over our military installations and gather information, and our president didn't shoot it down until it was over the ocean, and they had difficulty recovering the information that was in it. So I think they believe that our society here in America has ADD, that we don't pay attention to anything for very long and we forget about these important issues and move on, and that the president has learned that about us as well and thinks if he can just change the narrative, maybe come out with some other political scandal against the other party or a former president, that the American people will just move on and forget about the fact that he's giving away our country and he's giving it away to the enemy.
How about that? Is that articulate? Is that clear? Is that gutsy? It's a shame that it requires guts to say the obvious today. But in fact, it is so. So he's giving away our country and he's giving it away to the enemy. How much clearer is it necessary to be? Yes, she said that. She said that. And I'm so glad she did. Gorgeous woman, as an aside, which of course, oh no, you can't comment. You can, but you can't. It depends on who you are. Some people can do anything they want. Other people have to watch their words or shut up or shut themselves down. We don't do that here. But I picked that particular clip because it is a perfect example of an articulate response, as I say, gutsy. And we all who love liberty, who love decency, who love moral accountability, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, who we can see is blatantly and brazenly under attack right now, need to employ that kind of courage and speak our own minds. We all have different styles. We all have different spheres of influence, much greater than we believe. We have much greater spheres of influence than we believe. We have friends, family, colleagues, people that we have been taught that it is just not polite to discuss politics and, of course, religion. But I'm telling you, it is absolutely essential to use those God-given rights to speak up, speak out, and talk truth, because the price for merely expressing an opinion and or dissent is going higher and higher and higher, and that price continues to rise when people back down, when people censor themselves. The left has tried to teach their bandwagoners that words are violence and violence is free speech. That's just another lie. Ladies and gentlemen, words are not violence. Words are speaking your own truth and elevating individuality from following the conformity of the group. All right. I got to take a break. And when we come back, we have two wonderful guests. Can't wait to tell you about them. You're listening to Spouting Off here on WSMN 1590 AM and 95.3 FM and all around the internet after that. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
One of the things that I really like about MyPillow is the support. It gives my neck a little hug.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Call or go online to take advantage of my best offer ever. For a limited time, when you use your promo code, you can get premium MyPillows regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. That's 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind. Like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
The Reading Foundation provides evaluation and tutorial programs based upon the Orton-Gillingham philosophy of learning, based upon the study of language, how children acquire language, and the mechanisms involved in learning. All the learning pathways of the brain, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and tactile, are addressed and strengthened to build a strong foundation for the acquisition of reading skills. If you are interested in learning more, please contact the Reading Foundation for more information. The Reading Foundation is at 10 Northern Boulevard, Unit 19, Amherst, New Hampshire, 03031. Or you can email us at readingfoundation_rf@yahoo.com. And of course, you can call anytime at 603-882-0992. The Reading Foundation, Amherst, New Hampshire.
Karen Cataline got her parents to name her Karen before she was born, so she could grow up to be a punchline. Now here's more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Here she comes. At first you smile.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. Such a pleasure and an honor to sit in this chair and do Spouting Off 3 days a week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Well, we have a really great guest on the line right now. His name is Clayton Trier, I think. He'll correct me if I've got that wrong. Clayton is a successful businessman and entrepreneur, previous winner of Houston's Entrepreneur of the Year Award, and a former CEO of a twice-named Houston-based company in Forbes' annual list of best small companies in America. He is the author of Outskirts of Redemption, and we're going to find out more about what that book is all about. Let me just see. Suicide is now the second leading cause of death. Funny, strange, odd that we were talking about suicide just a bit ago with regard to the trans killer. Clayton hopes that this story is going to bring awareness to the crisis and the signs of depression and hopelessness that young people can experience. Clayton Trier joins us right now. Is it Trier or Trier?
It's Trier, Karen. It rhymes with beer, I tell people, and that makes it easy for them to remember.
Trier. And for our listeners, it's Clayton Trier, T-R-I-E-R, because they're going to want to know about that when they look up your book. Welcome to the program. We're so glad to have you. So we have that right, that the book is called Outskirts of Redemption. Give us an overview, and then we'll delve right in.
Well, it's a coming-of-age story, and it's also a father-son story that takes place back in the 60s, 70s. It's a bit of historical fiction because there's so much of that time period that's woven into the scenes in the book, and it's somewhat lampooned, if you will, with our more modern ways of thinking. But it takes place in that time period in Southeast Texas, and it's the story of that a young man is telling. He's 21 years old, a recent college graduate, and he's looking back, and he's finally ready to confess. He feels like he's lived at the outskirts of redemption for the past 9 years, because when he was 12 years old, his best friend, his classmate, at a Catholic parochial school that they attended, killed himself suddenly and under some somewhat mysterious circumstances. And young Buddy, who's telling this story, Buddy knows that he was the one that was responsible for this. And he's lived the last 9 years with tremendous grief and guilt and confusion, but he's finally ready to tell his story.
Clayton, will it give it away if we ask whether how could he have been responsible? Was it a suicide, or he just feels responsible? Either it's a suicide or it's murder. A lot of people think you can drive people to suicide, and yes, sometimes that's the case. What was the case here?
Well, without giving away too much, as you say, it was a suicide. His friend killed himself, but he feels like it was his fault. And this is so common. I mean, I know you've been a social worker, and
yeah.
You've probably seen
yeah.
things like this, that the minute something like this happens, everybody starts playing the what-if game.
Yeah, a lot of people blame themselves. So this is more
right.
of a survival guilt and a, I could have done something, or it's my fault, or I'm responsible, right?
It's deeper than that, Karen. He did
okay.
something that he should not have done.
Okay.
He feels like he provided the means, and says on page one that this suicide could not have happened without my complicity, and I feel like I have a friend's blood on my hands.
Oh, wow. And is this fiction or nonfiction?
No, it's fiction. Yeah,
okay.
It's a fictional story.
All right. So tell us some more about, do we get a real good glimpse of the 60s and 70s and the cultural times there? Where do we go in this book?
Absolutely. Everything from, smoking not only being acceptable, but being fashionable. Women in the workplace being discriminated against in pay, homophobia. And a huge part of the book is racial integration in the schools, and what Buddy experiences as he tries to befriend some new black classmates. He's white, and those kinds of experiences. In fact, the book, I was very pleased. The book has only been out for 2 weeks. And in its first week out, it was number one new release in teen and young adult books on prejudice and racism. So that's a very central theme as well, going back to what it was like in the 60s and 70s.
It sounds like the book certainly indicts the 60s and the 70s for certain cultural attitudes. Does it elevate any of the attitudes of that time, as opposed to, we got some cultural attitudes today that are pretty horrifying by comparison? Or is the notion that, wow, look how far we've come?
No, I think instead of indicting, I would have used the word lampoon. To some extent, but it was a simpler time period before cell phones and the internet and all of these distractions that we go through, when there was still a large degree of family unity and family support in the country. So it. I think holds these things up in a very positive way, but in a sort of Woody Allen way, if you will, it lampoons them to some extent.
Yeah, the only reason I was asking, and I was trying to, touch on it lightly, is that the utter and complete obsession with racism, being used as a political bludgeoning tool to people who... don't even think that way, but are being accused of being racist. A lot of us are worn out with making everything about race today. And I would argue, and I'd love your thoughts, that, and I was coming of age in the 60s and the 70s myself, more in the 70s. And I think there was a greater attention to people being judged by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. And there was more attention to not making, being a little more intellectually honest and not making every single thing about race, even, you know, Dr. Seuss, for heaven's sake. Your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, I grew up in that time period too, and draw from my own personal experiences in setting the scenes for the book. And yeah, I agree with you. You know, we didn't have back then, we didn't have the 24/7, 365 news cycle. We went and got our news from Walter Cronkite or Huntley and Brinkley or whoever, and it was short, concise, and it was pertinent because they didn't have a lot of time back then. So yeah, those things have changed immeasurably today. This book, again, like I say, harkens back to maybe a more simpler time. It's a more time when religion was big in families. The story takes place at a Catholic school. And, you know, back in the, I was raised Roman Catholic. I know you're Jewish, but raised Roman Catholic, you were taught back in the 60s, 70s, even 80s, that suicide is a mortal sin. Stop, you know, period. You have broken one of the commandments. You have killed, and you go to hell. You don't get an option at it. And in the book, the father character trying to explain to his son about his dead friend just doesn't hold with that same philosophy. He feels that mental defects are no different than a baby who might be born with a crooked spine. It's just harder to see. It's harder to detect. But it's a defect. It's a defect nonetheless. And God is not going to, at least the dad's view, as he tells his son, is not going to pass that kind of a judgment on a young boy.
So does the faith figure in, I'm guessing, to the outskirts of redemption? So again, without giving away too much in the book, what can people expect in the redemption part of the story?
Well, the story has a part one and part two. Part one takes place in the 60s, where the young man is recounting what happened when he was 12. His best friend killed himself. Part two is more the redemption. Part one is fairly dark, and it's about all this guilt and grief that he has. Part two, it takes place in the 70s, and through a number of circumstances and scenes and things that happen in his life, including finding love, he feels like he's able now to confess what he did and seek forgiveness and seek redemption.
I see. Well, great. What else do you want to tell us about this book? We have about 4 minutes. I want everybody to know how to find it. When did it come out?
2 weeks ago on paperback and on Kindle. And the response has just been terrific. I'm very humbled and grateful for all the people who have gone out and ordered the book in its initial release. The Audible will be coming out probably not for another 3 to 5 weeks. We've got a great reader. This guy is he did two auditions for me, and he'll knock your socks off. If you
Isn't that
like,
nice when you get a really great person
Anyway, it won't be available probably for a month. So that's how long it's been out.
Good. Pardon me if I say that from maybe a slightly more conservative filmmaker, it sounds like this story would make a terrific screenplay. Have you thought about that?
Well, you know, I hope so. I'm a fairly religious person, And I'm just leaving this at this point in the good Lord's hands. I'm mm-hmm. not trying to set my own expectations or things like that. And if that happens down the road, then it happens. And I'll be blessed at that point, I hope, and we'll deal with it.
Well, the reason I mentioned, I'm just such a huge fan of alternative entertainment that everyday people and conservatives and just anybody who has common sense loves America, that they want to and need to support entertainment too. And we get to interview a lot of new up-and-coming filmmakers who are making films for ordinary people who don't want to be have the constant wokeism pushed down their throats every day, every time they look at a movie. That's why I watch movies from the 40s and the 50s. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get woke ideology, you know, woven in with the story of entertainment. So my hope is that you will write a screenplay and sell it. Tell everybody again how they can find the book and your final thoughts on whatever. We got a minute.
Karen, they can find the book by going to my website, www.ClaytonTrierMyName.com. And there's a link there to order the book that will take you over to Amazon. I would make one other comment. I didn't just kind of come up with this idea out of the blue, clear sky, as Forrest Gump would say. it was inspired in me when my daughter was 12 years old. A very good friend of hers, a classmate of hers, killed himself.
Oh.
And it just was a huge shock to our whole school community, to her, and to try to get her to stop blaming herself for not being a better friend, for not doing things. I had to crawl inside her skin. I listened to a lot of child psychologists and all at her school, took down copious notes. And that process led me to think about, well, what would I have done if I were 12, my best friend? And that led to this fictional story.
I apologize so much. We have to wrap it up, but I am so very glad that you brought that up. That's a question I should have asked. I'm glad that you answered it because that's just heart-wrenching and really important, driving that story. Clayton Trier, go get his book, Outskirts of Redemption. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we have another guest. Boy, what a stellar guest. Daniel Greenfield, one of the best ever, will be with us next.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. They're not out to tell you the truth of what's happening. They're out to tell you the picture of the world that they represent. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in facts, and prevent people from being misled. The Epoch Times is independent. We're not controlled by any special interest, and we never will be. This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would ensnare this country in ignorance, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth. Subscribe today to our digital edition at theepochtimes.com and join the Americans who are seeking truth and tradition. Read The Difference on all your devices. We'd love to have you on board.
Are you tired of the same old snacks? Looking for something a little healthier than that bag of chips or candy bar? Even your average bag of trail mix these days is little more than peanuts, raisins, and candy-coated chocolate. Not very healthy, is it? Allow me to introduce you to White Mountain Munchies. Made from 100% all-natural ingredients, White Mountain Munchies combines unique flavors with nutritional value that will tingle your taste buds and strengthen and sustain your overall health and wellness. eating good never tasted so good. From Maggie's Maple Madness to Hannah's Heavenly Harvest, Grayson's Getaway Goodies, and our limited edition Christmas blend, Jacoby's Jolly Jumble, White Mountain Munchies offers nutritious and delicious snacks that the whole family is sure to love. Pick yours up now through our easy-to-use online store at whitemountainmunchies.com. White Mountain Munchies, non-GMO when you're on the go.
Each year, thousands of children fall victim to predators such as abductors. Our children are extremely vulnerable. Their hope is you, the adult, to come to their aid. If you're suspicious a predator may be lurking about a park, school, or mall, contact your local authorities. You may have just saved a child's life. This important reminder was a courtesy of and sponsored by MRES Electric in Pelham. Give them a call at 603-751-8340, where they always work for the safety and welfare of our community.
Outdoor Almanac. Brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal.
Looking for the antlers that deer shed every year has become a popular pastime. Deer start dropping antlers in January, but for some, the process may take until February or March. In the spring, the antlers grow back again. According to deer experts, the loss of antlers causes the buck no pain. It's been likened to leaves just falling off a tree. So where do you begin to look for sheds? Unfortunately, there's no easy answer. Usually, deer yard up in protected areas like hemlock stands to keep the snow and cold away. But so far this winter, the deer have moved around pretty much wherever they want because of the lack of snow. So if it were me, I'd try fresh trails or fences that they may have jumped. And if you don't find any, well, you had a nice walk. And come spring, the mice and squirrels will find the sheds and chew on them to get their calcium fix. So if you look at it that way, shed hunting is a win-win.
Outdoor Almanac is brought to you by New Hampshire Fish and Game's Wildlife Journal, the magazine for people with outside interests.
Spouting Off with Karen Cataline will return in a moment.
Since 1930, United Way of Greater Nashua has been your trusted partner to fight for the health, education, and financial stability of every person in every community. When a low-income child needs access to dental care, or parents need quality after-school programs where their kids can learn and be safe, United Way is there. When a person with disabilities needs a supportive day program where they can thrive, or a family loses its home and needs a place to regain financial stability, United Way is there. When a homebound senior needs food and supportive social connections, or when it comes time to die with dignity, United Way is there. The programs supported by your United Way are the heart and soul of Greater Nashua. When you volunteer or donate to United Way, you lift up the community where you live and you work. As a highly regarded nonprofit with Charity Navigator and GuideStar, you can be sure that your donations will be used for the work of making Greater Nashua stronger, smarter, and safer. Learn more and connect with us at UnitedWayNashua.org.
Karen Cataline puts the Judeo in Judeo-Christian. Now back to Spouting Off.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off. Such a pleasure to be with you in difficult, challenging times. One of the great things about doing this job is to talk to stellar writers, people who really have excelled in their field. And there isn't anybody, I think, that's better as a writer and reporter than this next guest. Daniel Greenfield joins us, a Shulman Journalism Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He is an investigative journalist and writer focusing on the radical left, Islamic terrorism, and so much more. He's the Sultan Kanish, prolific and a must read. Welcome, Daniel Greenfield, to Spouting Off.
Thank you so much. You're so kind.
I have a lot of respect for you, my friend. I've interviewed you many times. It's always a pleasure to see you on the schedule. You're the kind of course, writer my friends, Jewish and not, send me your articles all the time. One of the latest that, actually it's a week old now, is 1% of Democrat counties make up 42% of America's murders. I've got, and here's what I want to do is ask you this question up front and let you talk about which of these many articles. Well, if you go to frontpage.com, we have, I'm just going to read a couple of your headlines because you post like 3-4 articles like a day. Only 38% in U.S. say patriotism is important. That's astonishing. Netanyahu's shameful surrender to the left. And on and on it goes. The question that I have, and then we'll just zero in on, we could go in a lot of different places, is you have a bird's eye view, a front row seat to a decline in America. Your boss, David Horowitz, writes about it often. There's a subtitle of this thing about patriotism. This is what national suicide looks like. Gosh, I just guess I want to ask you, how do you keep going? What keeps you going when you write about the most heartbreaking, you're writing about national suicide, but you're still a professional. Just talk to us about that, if you would, and then we'll talk about your articles.
I think the most important thing, whether you're a journalist or whether you just have any ordinary job, is perspective. Obviously, you have to do your job, whatever it is, but you also need to have perspective. Now, perspective can come from faith. It can come from your personal philosophy. Your attachment to your family comes to the conviction that there are things to analyze life that matter, and that overall, we do the best that we can individually. We try to do good work. And that there is a higher power that attends to things beyond that. So it's important for us to do what we can. I try to do what I can. But I also remember that in the end, the struggle is not just in our hands, that there is a God who ultimately attends to things.
Huh. It's so articulate. And thank you for that. I appreciate it. I just didn't want to get it rushed at the end. Let's talk about this most recent article that you wrote with a heartbreaking, again, title, that only 38% in the U.S. say patriotism is important. You say this is what national suicide looks like. Tell us more.
Well, the Wall Street Journal had a new poll. The numbers are deeply troubling, and they reflect the larger, just the collapse of life in America. As you mentioned, I headlined one of the numbers, which is that only 38% of Americans say that patriotism is an important value to them. Among Democrats, that's down to 23%, 27%, 29% among independents, and only even down to 59% among Republicans. Numbers for people who actually say that having children is important, it's down to 26% among Democrats, 20% among independents, and 38% among Republicans. And we see this reflected in birth rates, importance of religion, 27% among Democrats, 38% independents, 53% Republicans. And, you know, we see this all around us. This is just a survey. It's dry numbers. We see people just giving up. We see the number of overdoses, suicides. We look at mass shootings. Where does that kind of thing come from? Who walks into a school, opens fire, and kills children? Well, people who are completely broken. We're becoming a society of broken people because we've lost our meaning, our purpose, our faith, our sense of why do we get up in the morning and why do we go on? This really ties into your first question.
Mm-hmm. It most certainly is. And that's the underpinning of a lot of this. And it's how you really go to the heart and soul of some of the matters that we are facing. Why don't we just zip over to this article that my friend sent me a week ago that a lot of conservatives, most of our audience, doesn't know. I don't know if they could persuade anybody, but 1% of Democrat counties make up 42% of America's murders. Oh, my heavens.
Yeah, we have a very specific, we don't have a national gun problem. Media keeps talking about how we have a gun crisis. We have a national crime problem. We don't have any of those. Crime, as any law enforcement person will tell you, sometimes they'll have to tell you off the record, but they will tell you it's mostly gang violence. Most of the shootings are being carried out by gang members. They often target other gang members. They're bad at it, so there's plenty of collateral damage. The mass shootings are very much an exception. And there was actually an interesting survey from John Watt, who's a really good guy working on refuting gun control arguments. And he pointed out that 1% of Democratic counties actually make up 42% of murders. 2% of counties, again, Democrat, make up the vast majority of America's murders. And majority of America's counties actually have 0 to 1 murders. So most of the violence is coming out of major urban areas, L.A., New York City, Philly, Baltimore, Dallas, D.C., Miami-Dade, so on and so forth. They have a lot of population, but they're not the majority of the population. It's about 21% of the population. Nonetheless, they're responsible for the vast majority of the crime and the violence in the country. If somehow they were to vanish or we stopped counting them, America's crime rate, America's murder rate would start looking like, you know, one of those sleepy European countries that gun control activists keep telling us we could be like if we just got rid of guns. We don't need to get rid of guns. We need to get rid of the criminals who are operating in major urban areas under Democrat rule.
Yes, yes. Just to share with you, last week I created a meme that said, Democrats make cities, all our cities unlivable, and then they want to force us to live in them. So they want to tell us how great it is to live in a city, and they've destroyed every American city, practically, in America. Daniel Greenfield is our guest, and a stellar one at that. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the horrific murder at the church yesterday. How does it figure in that we're seeing, and again, this doesn't mean we're going to make a broad generalization, that people who are gender confused, suffering from gender dysphoria and suicidal thoughts are committing mass murders? I assume you're probably going to be writing about this. I detest the fact that people weigh in so very quickly, but there are parts of the story that are coming out quite clearly. What are your thoughts?
So I also don't want to necessarily jump the gun, but speaking generally, in the past, we understood that somebody who believes that they're a member of another gender is experiencing mental problems. In the past, we have tried to treat them. You know, somebody thinks they're a horse, you treat them as having mental problems. Now we do something called gender-affirming care, which means dosing them with heavy amounts of drugs that certainly do not do anything for their mental stability and destructive surgeries. This is a population that has now a very high suicide rate, precisely because of the so-called gender-affirming care. Instead of, we know when you don't treat mental illness, when you actually try to instead convince the person that they're not crazy, that they're actually going to help turn them into Napoleon, well, it's not going to do good things for their stability, for their functionality, and violence follows. Now, suicide is very common in this population. You know, mass shootings are a kind of a suicide, except they want to take a whole bunch of other people with them. That's what mass shooters tend to do. Female mass shooters are very, very rare, but female shooters, when they do happen, tend to target children and families, which seems to have happened here. And again, I don't want to project what was going on in her head, but on the one hand, she was acting out in a very kind of a male mass killing. On the other hand, it was something that you see among women when they do commit the violence. It is often oriented towards families, often oriented toward children. She may have lost hope in the future. She may have seen what was taken away from her and decided to, you know, destroy it for other people. Again, this is speculation, but the bottom line is you have somebody who is suffering from mental problems. We no longer treat those mental problems. We prop them up, and the results are horrific. In both cases, it's suicide. In this case, it was murder.
Absolutely. And the stories are coming out today that she was indeed suicidal, planned to die that day. And it makes one wonder, and of course we're all wondering a lot of things, watching the way the radical left media is handling this very inopportune narrative. And also, the left has demeaned testosterone and gender in general with toxic masculinity and all that. And yet they're shooting women full of it. One would wonder whether this young woman had been shot with any testosterone or hormone blockers or whatever. Might be something interesting or sad, but to investigate, because I don't think the so-called propaganda media is going to. You know?
No, of course they're not. We have a narrative now that's going on about how 28-year-old women should not be allowed to hold guns, but we should, of course, absolutely shoot up 14- and 16-year-olds with puberty blockers and hormones. And, you know, that does not do anything good for your stability, for your emotional control, for your state of mind. And this, by the way, is the case for a lot of medications that we're giving to teenagers, even not involving gender. Those medications have high suicide rates. And, you know, when we wonder, why are they shooting up schools? Well, again, we've had a number of cases where teenagers on these medications have shot up schools.
And Christian schools at that. You ask in one of your articles, Is it a hate crime for a shooter to shoot up a Christian school? Right?
Yeah, we'd have a very, very simple answer if it was the shoe on the other foot. Yeah.
Exactly. Wish I had time to talk about Netanyahu, most Americans, and you know, it's hard to understand our own politics, let alone Israel's politics. But the media, again, is mischaracterizing her. And you say, if you could make a quick comment about this, and I'm sorry I'm jumping all around, but you have so much material. Netanyahu's shameful surrender to the left, that isn't definitely how the media is proclaiming it. What say you on that one?
It's deeply dishonest, and but this is kind of what we're living with. We're living with a culture of systemic, persistent dishonesty.
Yes. That's as quick as we can say. I'm going to give you the last word. Take about the last minute. First of all, let's tell everybody how they can find you, not only on Front Page Mag, but you're still writing at Sultan Kanish as well, are you not?
I am indeed. I have the honor of working for David Horowitz at frontpagemag.com as a Showman Journalism Fellow, and you can find my writings at Sultan Kanish at danielgreenfield.org.
Yeah, I just want to say that again so people hear it. Sultan Kanish. Did I ever ask you? Here's a petty little question. How you came up with Sultan Kanish?
It was a more unserious name from a time that we had the luxury of being a bit more unserious. Now, unfortunately, things have gotten much more serious. But I do miss those times when it was a bit more lighthearted.
Yes, I do too. What are you working on next? You have so much.
I'm working on a variety of articles, including abuses at the IRS and what the electric car mandates are doing to the automobile industry, which is losing billions for just recorded a $3 billion loss on electric cars, yet government mandates are pushing these forward.
Yeah. Well, again, we ended a little quickly. A good investigative journalist such as yourself doesn't like to make speculations, I understand. But with everything going on, isn't it about time we said that we have a government that has malicious intent towards us? Is that a fair statement for an investigative journalist like you?
I think what we have, unfortunately, is even bigger than a government. We have an ideology that has seized control not only of the government, the left controls much of the government, they now control much of corporate America and the institutions of life in general. They control a lot of churches and synagogues. They control so much, it's easier to state the things they don't control than the things that they do control, unfortunately.
We have to leave it there. It is an honor and a pleasure, sir, Daniel Greenfield, to have you on our program. Come back anytime and keep up the great work. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That does it for this edition. We'll be back on Thursday and Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Join us then and keep on a spouting off.